a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Senate Ag will come to order. Welcome to the internet listeners, but more importantly, welcome to those who are in our audience today. And I believe we have a special guest here this morning. Correct me if I'm wrong, but please stand up and be recognized. I believe we have the young producers here in the back. The Cattlemans? There you go. We're glad you're here. You picked a great, the best committee to be a part of. Just a quick reminder for those of you in the audience and us up here in the front that our cell phones need to be turned off as well. At this time, the secretary will call the roll. Bagalka.
Here.
Frerichs.
Here.
Frizzly.
Here.
Garnas. Hansen.
Here.
Roden.
Here.
Valley.
Here.
Maher.
Here.
Krebs.
Here.
Quorum is present. The posting of the minutes is in your books. I'm looking for a motion for approval of the minutes. So moved by Senator Frizzly, seconded by Senator Frerichs of approval of the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are so approved. We have on our agenda today Senate Bill 1, which is make form and style revisions to certain statutes related to natural resources, and also below that, the Animal Care Law Review Report. So at this time, I want to remind those that are testifying on behalf of Senate Bill 1, opponents and proponents, to sign in, and if you have any paper to distribute, we have our two pages here to do that as needed. At this time, I will call for proponent testimony on Senate Bill 1, making form and style revisions to certain statutes related to natural resources.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be the one to introduce this bill, and if I may pitch it from here, I would ask to do that.
Granted.
Thank you. Committee members have before you a text of Senate Bill 1. We couldn't afford to make copies sufficient to hand out to everybody, I guess, but this may well be, and I don't say this lightly, may set a record for the longest bill ever to be introduced. I think it's 220 pages long. But I say I don't minimize the importance of it because it really is quite important. This is a result of the work from the summer study, the Agency Review Committee of the Department of Environment and Natural Resources. And there are a couple on this committee who, on this Ag and Natural Resources Committee, who also sat on that summer study. And I think that all would agree that we made every effort possible to be sure that even though this bill is very, very long, it contains no substantive change from the existing statute. And you might ask, well, why go to all the effort then? And after my introductory remarks, Mr. Magadens from the LRC will explain a little bit about what style and form does. But I can very briefly mention that really the purpose of this is to take a look at all of those statutes that have anything to do with the work of the DENR and try to make them so that they're more readable in everyday current language. Some of them have not been addressed for probably over 40 years, and they just lack the consistency with the type of wording that's done today in our drafting of legislation. Now, when legislation is ordinary passage of our work during the annual session, any bill that's brought forward, it will change some of those archaic phrases and things that are, just not very readable. But a lot of these DENR things have not been, there has been no occasion to bring them forward. And of course, LRC does not have the authority from us to just without just cause to go in and take a look at all of the legislation. So I believe that the members of the review committee committee did, you know, in fact, spend a good effort in going through and being sure that that there was no changes of substance or making any change in the law. And with that, I would stand down again, as I mentioned at the closing of the last committee meeting. I would hope that you would agree with this. I don't believe that we would like to, I do believe that we would not want to have any amendments put forward of any suggestions of something different, to basically say the same thing. And so with that, Madam Chair, I will stand on. I will certainly be available for any questions that committee members might have as we move forward.
Thank you, Senator Hansen. Further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 1. Further proponent testimony to Senate Bill 1. Tom?
Madam Chair, I would like to go over some of the things that we do in these types of bills and cleanup bills and kind of explain what the, you know, how it goes. LRC is directed by the executive board, which governs LRC, to do a cleanup bill each time that we do an agency sunset review. As Senator Hansen said, it's an opportunity for us to update archaic language, legalese, just modernize and clarify the statutes. You'll find some language in old statutes that's not in very good shape. You'll find some that's not so bad, but especially the older stuff, and I'm talking maybe 100 years old, you'll find long convoluted sentences that never seem to end. There's just a lot of things in order to make it more readable, more understandable, that it helps to go through this exercise and update these statutes. This is our only chance to do this to large sections of statutes. As Senator Hansen said, we do not have the authority to just go in and clean up outdated material. It has to be voted on in the legislature, and that's what we're doing here. And the agency review process is a good chance for us to do this to large bodies of statute. Now, the DE&R bill in particular, it is the longest one that we've had. However, the DE&R statutes are not in that bad a shape. They're in better shape than some other agencies, actually. The thing is, they just have a lot of statutes in their department. There are four different titles of the code that DE&R deals with, and they have a lot of material. Also, some of the sections in this bill are quite long, and we might be making one or two changes, you know, to a long section. So that's how the bill got to be so long. There are some exceptions. If you look at things like the federal laws governing irrigation districts that came in 1917, they're still there and they haven't been changed much. You can't get rid of them because there are still some groups that are using them. They don't get used much, but they get used. So we need to look at these kinds of things too. What we find in LRC is generally language from the 1980s and on is in pretty good shape. Before that, there's some work that's needed, and the older it gets, the more work that's needed. As Senator Hansen said, there are not any substantive changes in the bill. That's our goal. It's form and style only. No policy changes. And if you find something, find a particular subject area in the bill where you want to make policy changes, please do it in a separate bill. This needs to stay form and style, and that's our overall purpose here. A couple of things that guide us in. In 1939, the entire South Dakota Code was recodified and rewritten, not necessarily rewritten, but put in a different format and a different numbering system and all of that. And you'll find sometimes people will say, well, this section or this statute dates back to 1939. If it says SDC 1939, South Dakota Code 1939, it doesn't date back to 1939. If you look that up in the 1939 books, which we have downstairs in our library, there will be previous citations, and it'll be older than that even. Anyway, in the 1939 rewrite, there's a section, a chapter that's still there called Construction and Effective Statutes. This contains guidelines basis for what the statutes mean, how to write them. You know, just it's a good starting point for our drafting policies and methods in South Dakota and for what we do in these cleanup bills as well. There's a section there, just two examples. Section 2-14-6 says words used in the singular number include the plural and the plural the singular, except where a contrary intention plainly appears. So that means you write in singular. You don't have to say any person or persons. You don't have to say the or persons part. You're covered because the law says you're covered. You, that way we can write more simply and more to the point. Same thing, section 2-14-7 says words used in the present tense include the future as well as the present. So you don't have to say any person who has or will have. You don't need to say the will have part. It's already covered in the present tense. This allows us, again, to write more simply and more to the point. We have, I won't go through all this stuff with you, we have a drafting manual in LRC that's been around. I've been in the office 23 years, and this has been here at least that long. It goes into a lot of detail as to our drafting methods and the kinds of things that we do and don't do. It's also on our website. If you want to look at it, click on general information and drafting manual, and there it is. But those are some of the things that guide us in doing these kinds of bills. Some of the changes we make are to conform to South Dakota drafting methods, to be uniform. Some are to, you know, are necessary for clarity, simplicity. Some things, on some of these things, you might find examples in other states or in federal law where they do it differently than we do, and that's fine. We, like I say, want to stay uniform, and that's why we do it the way that we do. Plus, we kind of like we think we're doing it the right way, basically. The most basic thing we can do is to break up long sentences and paragraphs to be more understandable. And in some of the older passages, that gets to be an issue. There's one here that I'd like to point out. It's section 508 of your bill, but it's SDCO 46A 13.9. Starts in the middle of the page. This is fairly fine print. It starts there, ends here. This is all one sentence. The first period here ends is over here. We've got this much and this much. That's one sentence. And I was debating whether to read this. I don't think I'll put you through reading it, but after about this far, you're not going to know where we're going with it. So that's one that we corrected simply by trying to divide it up and break it up into shorter sentences, and that helps. And there are less extreme examples of that, but it's an important thing for making it more readable and understandable. Another thing we do, gender neutral. In the older language, you'll find he and his or whatever. We try to restate the noun rather than the pronoun. We say, you know, the person or the secretary or whatever. We don't say he or his. It serves another purpose in addition to gender equality. It also helps make the thing more understandable. If it's a long section and we're starting to throw around several pronouns and you've got several actors going on in there, you don't know which him we're talking about. So if you restate the noun, it's easier to follow and a better product. Same thing, there's a lot of archaic legalese, legalistic language, words like thereon, thereof, therefrom, therewith, therein, heretofore, here and before, stated, aforementioned, said and such. Usually you can say the instead of stead or such. These are sort of like pronouns in a way. If it's a long passage with a lot of actors and a lot of things happening and we say thereon or thereof, pretty soon you don't know what's being referred to with thereof. It's better to repeat the noun and then you know for sure what we're talking about. A couple of other things that we deal with and that cause confusion, frankly. May and shall, everybody knows those two words. May in legal writing gives you permission to do something. Shall in legal writing is a direct order to do something. The problem is in conversational language and in informal writing, there are different meanings. May in informal writing means maybe, maybe not, you know, I might. That's not the meaning in legislative writing. So there's confusion there sometimes. One thing we do in particular that causes confusion has to do with may not or shall not, the use of the negative with those words. In LRC in South Dakota, we do not use shall with a negative. and it gets a little involved, but we say that if you use shall not, the not removes the order to do something, but it does not remove the permission to do something. If you say may not, the not removes the permission to do something, therefore it's a stronger prohibition. And so there will be instances in this bill where you'll see shall not was replaced with may not, and that's the reason. May not is a stronger prohibition than shall not, even though it doesn't seem that way. It kind of goes against people's intuition, but we don't use a negative with shall. Other things, we use if rather than where or when. I mean, if it's something that actually has to do with location, you can say where. If it's something that has to do with time, use when. But if it's a conditional statement, use if. Another one that causes questions sometimes has to do with agency law. That means it's both in statute and case law. If a public official has the power to order his or her subordinates to do something, he can do that, and you don't have to state that in the code. You don't have to say the secretary or the secretary's designee. You can just say the secretary shall do this, and you're covered, and he still has the power to have his subordinates do that. There are usually questions about that. Another thing that there will be questions about sometimes in these kinds of bills is severability clauses. A severability clause says basically that if anything in this bill or this chapter is found to be unconstitutional, the rest of the chapter is still good. Well, we don't need to have those. There is a lot of case law in South Dakota that says that applies to our statutes in general. We don't have to say it each time in each section. And if we did, there'd be a lot of sections that would need it. So we take out severability clauses when we do this. Do the cleanup bills and other kinds of cleanup. There are other types of changes in here, obviously, but those are the most common ones and the ones that most commonly create questions. As far as procedure, we worked with DENR a lot. They were very, very cooperative and very helpful. They had different parts of their organization, different people in different programs look at the stuff that pertained to them, and so I think the bill has had a lot of eyes look at it, and it has had a pretty thorough going over. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Tom, for construction of Statutes 101. For those of you in the audience, this is the size of the bill, and when we talk about style and form changes, that's what he was explaining, is it's not necessarily substantive changes, meaning language and law, but specifically some of the language. So what he talked about is good history for those of you in the audience, and I hope you took some open ears to that, just to have. And then when you're dealing with your children, know the difference between shall and may and explain that to them. That's a good enforcement in the House. Well, further testimony on Senate Bill 1.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Perner, Secretary of the Department of Environment and Natural Resources. DNR is in full support of Senate Bill 1. We definitely enjoyed working with the Senate Summer Study Committee that was chaired by Senator Hansen. It was a good committee. We had a good process. We enjoyed working with LRC, Tom Magadance, and some of his folks on these. The Attorney General's office was also involved. I just want to reiterate that, again, we're satisfied that all the changes proposed in Senate Bill 1 are style and form only. There's no substantive change. Where there was a question of whether or not some change was going to be a substantive change or not, Tom was an excellent party to work with. We'd say, maybe this is a substantive change, and that came out of the bill. And so we don't think that, again, there's any substantive changes in the bill. We look forward, if you pass Senate Bill 1, we look forward to working with a new set of code that hopefully will be easier to read and more understandable. So we, again, support Senate Bill 1 and urge your support. Thank you,
Mr. Perner. Further proponent testimony to Senate Bill 1. Further proponent testimony to Senate Bill 1. Seeing none, moving to opponent testimony to Senate Bill 1. Opponent testimony. Opponent testimony to Senate Bill 1. Seeing none, I will close a testimony and move to committee question, discussion, and or action on Senate Bill 1.
Madam Chairman.
Senator Roden.
I heard action in there, so I
action
will say
is it.
I move do pass.
There's a motion before you, a do pass motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There's been a do pass motion by Senator Roden, seconded by Senator Valley. Any further comments on that motion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Roden.
Well, just briefly, I was part of the summer study, and I believe that they did their homework. We were provided another lesson or two on what the style and form cleanup entails. Just as, and I know that the members of this committee probably need no reminder, but we had a similar bill in state affairs yesterday, in which one of the members was pretty determined to add amendments to try and address some specific problems that he foresaw with existing language. And of course, I think that we understand the importance of being able to maintain the integrity of the statement that there is no substantive changes to a bill like this in order to get it done. And if there are areas other than style and form that need to be addressed, that they should be done in separate legislation. And again, I know this committee needs no reminder of that, but we should be protective as committee members when we take a bill like this to the floor, also to help foster it through with no substantive changes.
Further comments on Senate Bill 1, the do pass motion? Further comments on do pass of Senate Bill 1? Senator Valley.
We have some students and some other people out there, and just so you understand that when we have a bill this size, I don't want you to think that we're just not looking at it. You know, there's been comments like that made several times, and that's why when Senator Roden said it's been gone through and there are no substantive changes, it's just wording, it's just making a taking two pages and not being one sentence. So it's easier to understand, and everyone has agreed that there is no changes here at all. So it's not as though someone is trying to sneak something through, and that's what we do not want to have happen. And that's why when Senator Roden says we do not amend this, if you want to do something, you do it in a separate bill. So just want to make that sure that everyone in the audience also understands that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Valley. Further comments on do pass motion of Senate Bill 1? Seeing none, the motion before you is a do pass of Senate Bill 1. All those in favor will signify by aye. Opposed, nay. The secretary will call the roll.
Bogalka.
Aye.
Frerichs.
Aye.
Frisley.
Aye.
Garnas. Hansen.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Krebs.
Aye.
Senate Bill 1 has a do-pass motion and has passed. Senator Roden.
Move consent.
There's been a motion to a consent calendar by Senator Roden, seconded by Senator Hansen. Any comments on that consent motion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Roden.
Well, as further explanation to the young people that are in the group, a consent calendar motion is a way to expedite the process. If we have legislation like this that has no substantive changes, it goes on the consent calendar when it goes to the Senate floor. Those bills are not open for debate. You can ask questions, and if there's something that you want to debate or a question that doesn't get answered, any member of the Senate chamber can pull that bill off consent calendar. But it just allows us to get through the process in a more expeditious manner on the Senate floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Roden. Further comments on the consent motion? If not, this is a voice vote. All those in favor will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Consent calendar for Senate Bill 1. Seeing further action on our agenda, but before moving on, we do have the Animal Care Law Review Report, and I believe Lauren is here. Good, ready. But before that, I do want to recognize several guests in the audience. I believe we have the State Farm Service Agency leadership team. Are they here? And if so, please stand to be recognized. Again, we appreciate having you here. It's a great committee to be a part of. I believe we also have, as Senator Valley has stated in his hometown of Dakota Wesleyan, the state and local government class, along with their instructor, Don Simmons. Would you please stand and be recognized? Again, welcome, and we appreciate you being here, and I hope you learned a few things being in the state and local government class on construction of Statutes 101, as Tom has shared with us. So it was a good day to be here. You'll learn some style about language, about style and form. Moving on, then we'll next item on our agenda will be the Animal Care Law Review Report. I believe we have several comments from the review report group, committee, and at this time we'll call Lauren Pancrest forward.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Good morning, Lauren.
Thank you for taking the time to give us the opportunity to report back to you. By way of background, what we'll do this morning is Dr. Odakovin, the state veterinarian, will probably provide the substance of the report in terms of the review of our statutes and whatnot and how it works. But this came about over the past couple of years. There have been several legislative proposals brought forward by those who believe that maybe our animal care laws were not adequate and that maybe some of the penalties might not be appropriate or adequate. And so during those discussions, I would say that the opposition to that was led primarily by agriculture groups because of our concern about people wanting to limit the way production agriculture is done today with livestock. So so as a result of that, over lunch one day, there were four of us that had a meeting, and we were just talking about this influence from outside the state and some within the state about animal care and animal welfare. So, and that was Mary Duvall with South Dakota Farm Bureau, Jody Hickman and Brenda Foreman with the South Dakota Cattlemen's Association, and myself, Lauren Pancrats, and I apologize, the registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Pork Producers. We met and we started talking about, well, why don't we try and do something so that we take charge of that discussion? It affects us, it impacts us, and let's take charge of that discussion. So consequently, and you know, if you're folks that like visual aids, this is how it started on this cocktail napkin. That's where we laid the framework for what subsequently became the Animal Care Review. And the reason primarily is that we felt it was appropriate for us, and we probably owed it to our industries as well as those who had some concerns about our laws, to sit down and take a review of those laws. They had not been substantially reviewed for almost 20 years. And so we put that together and talked with Dr. Odakovin, the state veterinarian, and along with the Animal Industry Board, and then we created this review committee. And we had people from all the animal industry groups, law enforcement, ag extension, animal control agencies and officers, humane societies. We tried to be as inclusive as we could be with the people that are most directly affected. We had two meetings. At that first meeting, probably at both of them, we had, I would say, between 50 and 60 people in attendance. And they brought their issues and concerns. We separated into two groups. One was to discuss companion animals, and included in that was horses, because horses are identified as livestock, but sometimes they're more pets than they are working animals. And then a group that dealt with the livestock component. We met, had those discussions, and then came back and met as a group later in the day and outlined what we would do for the following meeting. And then that second meeting was this fall. And at that point is when we sort of had our discussions about what do we need to do? Is there something we should do? And we had some very candid and open discussions. Representative Vanneman attended both meetings. Representative Elliott from Aberdeen attended the second meeting, so we had input from legislators as well. So with that said, and with your permission, I would like to have Dr. Odakovin come up and walk you through our current statutes and what the outcome in our report contains. So,
Thank you, Lauren, and I appreciate you stating your name and who you represent. And Dr. Odekoben, please testify, or when you do testify, please state your name. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman and members of the committee. My name is Dustin Odekoben, your state veterinarian, and it is a pleasure for me to be here in front of you this morning to discuss the outcomes of this group that met over the summer. And I do appreciate all of their hard work, particularly the organizing committee, but also to all of them who made the effort to come and provide some input. I think each time we met, we learned something from each other, and it was a good process to go through. So Mr. Pancras did an excellent job of giving you the background of why the committee was meeting and what the purpose was. And with that, I would just add or kind of reiterate that the laws for animal care in South Dakota have been around for a long time, and animal husbandry has been a concern, has been a priority for South Dakotans over the last century of animal agriculture in our state. And I don't know that it's any more important today than it was over the last 100 years, but what has changed is that only a fraction of the people now are involved with animal agriculture as once were. And so some of the perceptions on animal agriculture certainly are coming from a different viewpoint than maybe they once were. In addition, I think some of the standards of care for our small animals, both in rural and urban areas in the state, have elevated somewhat, and there is, I think, increased attention, and this is a timely topic to discuss. Mr. Pancratz mentioned that in 1992 the laws were substantially reviewed. At one time in the history of the laws, they primarily addressed the welfare of working animals as they were used in the fields and that sort of thing. Obviously, they've been updated frequently and since then have changed quite a bit. In 1992, a significant change was made to limit the authority or limit the responsibilities of local humane societies to species other than livestock. And what it did is authorize the Animal Industry Board to enforce the provisions of the Inhumane Treatment Chapter 40-1 specifically for livestock species. And livestock are defined in our current law very well. If you've been following what's happening in Ohio with the development of the Ohio Livestock Care Standards Board, they are just now getting to the point where South Dakota was 20 years ago in centralizing inhumane treatment complaints and standards under one board, and that's under the animal in our state under the Animal Industry Board. There are some differences between the Ohio Livestock Care Standards Board and our board, but the idea of bringing those complaints under one state agency is the same. I think the next thing I'd like to do, if I could, is just briefly, and for those of you that have had to listen to me in the past, go through, for example, animal ID. I like little box charts, and I'll just handle that. This diagram will help me explain to you how the current laws work and how who is affected, who is the responsible parties in responding to these complaints, and what the potential outcomes are. So if you'll follow along with me on this two-sided page, on the first page is up in the upper left-hand corner, it mentions livestock. So if the complaint involves livestock, and those being horses, cattle, sheep, swine, and other livestock is defined in 40-1 and excludes dogs, cats, and rabbits, and other household pets. If the complaint involves livestock, it needs to be directed to the Animal Industry Board. And we do receive those complaints from private individuals, from local law enforcement, including sheriffs, as well as local municipality law enforcement, and also from local humane societies. So a variety of different ways in which we receive those concerns. The investigation then is assigned to one of our 8 veterinarians that is employed by the Animal Industry Board, and 4 of which are located in different parts of the state, or potentially to one of our livestock disease inspectors. The evaluation is then made, to determine for the age, kind, species of animal, what the condition of the animal is. We try to do body condition scoring to evaluate the condition of the animal. We also try to evaluate any disease status that might be present. We evaluate the stored feeds on hand, the availability of feed and water, shelter if appropriate, and the environment that those animals are in. And based on that, the veterinarian that's employed by the Animal Industry Board determines whether or not there is neglect, or which is also in the definition of inhumane treatment. About 60% of the complaints that we get are equine, another 30 to 35% are bovine, and the remaining 5 are other livestock. And in a majority of those cases, we find no inhumane treatment. In the event where we do find neglect, that's as defined per 40-1-2.3, or inhumane treatment, as defined in 40-1-2.4, we basically take 3 different options. In most cases where we find neglect, in most cases we find that a little bit of education to the owner is all that's necessary to resolve the situation. And I'll give you an example. I mentioned that most of those complaints are on horses. A number of horse owners, particularly new horse owners, and as we have a lot of new horse owners that buy a place not too far out of town, get a couple of horses, and they may not be aware of the nutritional and husbandry needs of those animals. For example, they may have some young colts that are near some older horses and they're being pushed away by the older horses. Or they may not be aware of the parasiticide treatment that may be necessary for horses that are in concentrated locations, a small corral and that sort of thing. So what we find is typically we can give some education, and a lot of times, most of the time, people are very appreciative of that, and it resolves the situation. They're happy for the information, and the case is closed. In other cases, we may need to, and that's the middle box there, we have an agreement between the owner and the board, where the owner agrees to employ the services of a private veterinarian of their choice to get advice, proper advice on the care and well-being and husbandry of the animals in their care. And there will be visits and reports as necessary until the veterinarian and the board determine that the situation has been resolved. And that's a little bit more common if we get a complaint on a large number of livestock where it appears that some consultation from a private veterinarian may be warranted. Finally, in the most egregious cases, we do work with the state's attorneys and county sheriffs to assure that the animals are cared for. If there is severe neglect that doesn't appear to be resolvable, and any of those may be prosecuted by the state's attorney. Most likely they wouldn't be unless there is an impoundment in some severe cases there. So that's how we handle the cases, the complaints of inhumane treatment in livestock. Now, if you flip the page over, I've included an example, and actually this is an example that I've left in there. We actually had about 6 different examples during our last meeting discussion of how the law works, and we walked through all these. So this is dealing with a complaint of neglect in small animals, particularly a dog breeder. Those complaints would be referred to local law enforcement, for example, the sheriff, or a local authorized humane society as per 40-2-1. And that's a very good law. It lays out how the humane societies need to be authorized by the local authority, county commissioners, for example. And if that local humane society is authorized, they can enforce the sections of 40-1 for species other than livestock. The next box there is on the response and investigation. If the facility, I should have mentioned that one change in 2006 was made with support of the dog breeders in South Dakota to ensure that a South Dakota licensed veterinarian is present during any sort of investigation regarding inhumane treatment for a commercial dog breeding facility, and that is also defined in 40-1-41. If it does meet that criteria, then a South Dakota licensed veterinarian must be employed to accompany that investigation. And then at that point, We want to also be sure that any animal control officer that's involved in this, who's a Humane Society member, has judicial authorization as is required in 40-2-6. From there, the investigators, the local law enforcement or animal control officer should also consider any USDA licensure by the breeding facility. There are criteria to meet, but a commercial breeding facility, dog breeding facility, may fall under the requirements of USDA's Animal Care Division and is regularly inspected there. And we would encourage any investigation of such a facility to also be aware of what's gone on as far as the USDA inspections. So from there, they have very similar outcomes as the Animal Industry Board does on livestock. They can determine that there is no inhumane treatment, or they may determine that animal neglect or inhumane treatment is occurring and choose to go down the route of education, follow-up with a private consulting veterinarian, or impoundment. And the provisions of impoundment in the process is laid out in those sections of law. So I give that to you as background because those are some of the things. That's basically, in a nutshell, what the review committee reviewed is what are our laws now, how does it work, and how what is potentially there that can be used better, or are there any changes that need to be made? So the results, and you'll all get a written copy of the summary of that, but the results, I'm just going to touch on the five key topics. One, the group determined that the definition of livestock in our law right now is adequate and that it correctly identifies the species of livestock that are in South Dakota and that are raised as livestock here. Secondly, the group determined that the current penalty structure for animal abuse cases pertaining to livestock in South Dakota is adequate. Thirdly, the group determined that there may be a need for additional discussion on the regulation of dog breeding facilities in South Dakota. And again, I'll remind you that change in 2006 authorized or directed that a South Dakota licensed veterinarian be present during an inspection of a commercial breeding operation. However, this is one of the first points I'll highlight that maybe not everybody is aware of that law and that the need for that. And we are a state where there is not a state kennel licensure process. We don't inspect or license kennels. If they do meet the USDA Animal Cares criteria, they have to register and be licensed with USDA. They will be inspected by USDA inspectors. However, that does not mean that those entities are not regulated for animal welfare in South Dakota. Those animals still fall under our inhumane treatment laws. We just don't have a state licensing program. And so the discussion that the group felt was needed to get the word out that there are regulations for those animals, but it doesn't fall under a kennel licensing program. Fourth point is that there may need to be closer scrutiny of the certification and authority for humane societies and animal control officers. And again, as in 40-2 lays out the process whereby a recognized humane society in our state that has been organized and authorized by their local county commissioners can appoint a member to act as an animal control officer. But the animal control officer also has to seek local judicial authority by providing proof of their education, their experience, and the training that would be necessary to carry out their duties in enforcing the provisions of 40-1 for non-livestock species. And we think that maybe that's an area of education that could be that we need to work on, or that everybody in the committee thought we need to go back home and make sure that message is known. And finally, the fifth point is really a summary of everything, is that we're really finding that maybe we don't need new laws. We need to really do a better job of educating everybody on their roles and responsibilities in enforcing the current laws. And that goes, the local humane societies, the local law enforcement, state's attorneys, and several of those groups have been, we have attempted to contact and work with them, and that'll be an ongoing process. So with that pretty much summarizes the process of the meetings and what we learned, and I will let Mary Duvall follow up here.
Thank you, Dr. Ogrekoven, and we'll now move to Mary Duvall. Please state your name. Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Mary Duvall. I am here today on behalf of the South Dakota Farm Bureau. Thank you for the opportunity. We distributed the report to the Senate Ag Committee yesterday. If any of you did not get a copy, or if because it's so well written you'd like an additional copy, let me know. We will make sure you get that. Also, if there are any of you, you did not get one? Okay. We will make sure that I may not have enough to go around. Thanks. Also, if there are any of you who would like to see the minutes from the two public meetings we held, contact one of us and we'll make sure that you get that opportunity to see those. I want to thank Dr. Odekoven for his time and his patience in working with us. When we took that napkin to him a year ago, we had no reason to think that he was looking for additional work, but he really was a phenomenal resource for us, and we appreciate that. I also think we need to thank those 50 to 60 South Dakotans who took their own time and resources to come to Pierre and provide input on this. Everybody's goal was the same, and that is to make sure that animals in South Dakota are being well cared for. We had dog breeders that we worked with, and their goal is to make sure that their animals are being well cared for. It goes without saying that that works for farmers and ranchers, too. Also, you should know that the four of us on the steering committee sat down over a cup of coffee with the state director for the Humane Society of the United States. She indicated to us that she's not at all interested in regulating livestock. That's not her concern. We believe those comments seem to be at odds with what the national organization has been suggesting throughout the country over the last several years. We also sat down with a couple of the state's attorneys to hear what their concerns and suggestions are, and we believe those are reflected in some areas in the report that may merit further discussion. And with that, if you have questions, I have discovered that Dr. Odekoven is far better at answering them than I am. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Any further comments on the animal care statutes overview that we just had? Seeing none, I will open this up, and it's not in a bill form, of course, but it is a report that has been given as a review of our animal care laws on the books. So I will open it up to our committee members for questions of any of those that did testify at this time. Any questions from the committee from anybody particular? Senator Valley?
Just a quick review from the state veterinarian on, you were talking about there may be some need for review, and that was when I think we were talking about non-livestock. Could you just go over that again? I think, was there four or five things that you talked about? If you could go over those again, I went by pretty fast.
Dr. Odekoven?
Thank you, Madam Chairman and Senator Valley. I think maybe what you're referring to is the need for more discussion on regulating dog breeding facilities in our state. Is that
yes?
Okay, right. The in South Dakota is one state which does not have a state kennel licensing regulation. In other words, there's no inspection criteria or licensure process for a dog breeding facility. We do have the definition of a commercial breeding operation within our laws, which was added in 2006 with the support of the Dog Breeders Association and others, but we don't have a regulatory process. The committee did not determine that we needed one, simply that there may be the need for more discussion on that, particularly in how commercial dog breeding operations in South Dakota are already subject to the laws that we have on the books, because those animals are, as all animals are, subject to the laws that we have in place now.
Follow up, Senator Valley.
Did you get into any other type of discussions on non-livestock negligence or anything like that?
Dr. Odekoven.
Madam Chairwoman and Senator Novelli, certainly we did. As Lauren Pankratz mentioned, in the first meeting, we broke up into two separate groups, and one after a time of being together on some general topics. We broke them into two different groups. And one group primarily did focus on the dogs and cats, small animals, particularly with relation to how local law enforcement has a responsibility in following up on those complaints, how they interact with local humane societies, as well as reviewing the laws that pertain to the education, training, and experience that's needed for local animal control officers. And then that discussion was further expanded during the second meeting, and that was actually held right here in this room, and we did have several animal control officers representing humane societies from across the state, and we discussed in particular the educational requirements for animal control officers. There was some discussion as to whether we should have a statewide standard for training, but as was, I think, in the final discussion, currently our law allows for the local judge to determine that. And there may be a big difference in what the training requirements for an animal control officer in, for example, Minnehaha and Turner County would be as compared to rural Harding County, for example. There may be different qualifications necessary for that job. So, other than that, that's primarily where our discussions focused on is how our laws, what our laws now say, and how they can be more effectively used. And finally, I think the committee determined that no additional legislation is recommended at this time.
Further questions? Nope. Further questions of the committee. First, we have Senator Maher, then Senator Frisley.
Is Lauren still in here?
He's in another meeting.
Okay. All right. Or maybe you can just okay.
Question
if you want,
from Senator Maher.
Or Mary can answer it too. It's either.
We'll try.
Okay.
Mary Duval, Farm Bureau.
Mary, just a quick question. This is really interesting, really great. I think you guys did an excellent job. Just have one question. Were Farmers Union or Stock Growers involved in this?
Yes, they were invited. They had a representative. Each of them had a representative at the first meeting.
Okay. I just didn't see them listed at the top, so I was just curious if they were represented too.
Follow-up,
so.
Well, they weren't at lunch with us that day.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Follow-up. Senator Frisley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just had a question for the our state veterinarian. If I'm understanding this right, is there an overlapping between the local authorities and, say, a person who's authorized by the Humane Society in the going out and checking on, say, kennels and that? Or is that, who has the, I'm confused as to who really has the authority there. Is it the local authorities, or is it the Humane Society person that's authorized, or is it both of them, or how does that play out? And you know, why is there, if there is two of them, why?
Dr. Odekoven.
Madam Chairwoman, Senator Frisley, great question, and I appreciate that. There is some overlap in the authority for investigating complaints of inhumane treatment of small of non-livestock species between local law enforcement and local animal control officers who are so authorized. However, 40-2 very clearly points out the authorities that an animal control officer has that are not. They're not on par with a local law enforcement. For example, an animal control officer has the authority to go and investigate the complaint and also to request law enforcement. They can request that law enforcement accompany and carry out the judge's warrant and that sort of thing. So animal control officers play a very important role in South Dakota in investigating those complaints and following up with those. However, they do need to work in concert with their local law enforcement to carry out the provisions of the law.
Follow-up, Senator Frisley? Okay, further questions of the committee. Senator Frerichs?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question before our state vet. Dr. Odekoven, I'm just curious if you could share with us what's the kind of the working relationship with perhaps your office or any other state folks who would work with USDA, and I would guess maybe the APHIS, in terms of regulating, or in this case licensing. We know that USDA licenses the dog breeders. I actually had a great experience this spring. I was out visiting some of my students in the ag production program, and then I happened to swing into the Stickney area, and a fellow SDSU grad is operating a very successful dog breeding operation, and it just really amazed me, and I encourage other members of the Ag Committee, if you get a chance to go see one of those operations, they certainly keep them a lot cleaner than I do any of my cattle, and they just do a nice job. But if you could share the working relationship, please, and how that works.
Dr. Ogden-Coven?
Madam Chairwoman and Senator Frerichs, thank you. And you point out an excellent point that many often you hear the derogatory term puppy mills, and yet a number of the dog breeders in South Dakota operate very, very well managed and clean operations. We have a lot of, for example, hunting dogs that are raised here in South Dakota. Certainly, if you're in the market for a pet, everybody's advised to go visit your local shelter. However, I always point out good dogs have to come from somewhere, too, and there are a number of good places in South Dakota where that's occurring. So we do work very closely with USDA. USDA, as I'm sure everyone on the committee is aware, has many different divisions. For example, the Food Safety Inspection Service, the Veterinary Services, we work very closely with them on different issues. In this case, it's the Animal Care Division, which is a separate division of USDA. And I would say that we have a good working relationship with the Animal Care Division as well. We had one of the regional director for Animal Care, USDA Animal Care, participate in the first meeting that we had last May. He came and gave a presentation about the number of licensed and inspected facilities in South Dakota, as well as the number of complaints and a number of inspections that they have had to make as a result of those complaints. I would say his report to the group was very favorable. In addition, the inspectors and the veterinarians that work for USDA Animal Care are in contact with my office and do share reports when they find possible inhumane treatment, and where necessary, we follow up with those with the local law enforcement.
Follow up, Senator Frerichs. Senator Roden.
Thank you. Well, I have a couple of comments and maybe a question for Dr. Ogden-Coven. It sounds, and if this was covered in earlier discussion, I missed it, forgive me, but seems that this was kind of an ad hoc meeting put together, and there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I think it was probably a very good idea. I just got back from the Ag Chair Summit last weekend in Phoenix, and that's an eye-opener to attend events like that, because for South Dakota, it gives us a glimpse into the crystal ball to see what's coming our way. And the picture isn't real bright, especially with the groups that have animal agriculture square in their crosshairs, and they don't care what means they use to disrupt our business. And if we have the perception in the state that we're doing nothing in regards to animal of protecting animal welfare, then we leave ourselves open to those groups to come in and find that chink in our armor. Having said that, I'm curious, considering this is a good idea, Dr. Ogden-Coven, if there was anything, if you'd considered maybe making this a more permanent type arrangement, maybe formalize an animal welfare group. You know, it seems that you would be the obvious person to kind of take the bull by the horns in organizing that group.
Dr. Ogden-Coven.
Madam Chairman, Senator Roden, thank you, and appreciate that. You've made some good comments on the state of the situation, I think, with the concern for animal welfare in the nation. And yes, I do think this group, there's no set date, but I think this group realizes that we do have to continue to follow up on particularly the recommendations that were made for continuing to educate people. And we do attempt to do that. I've met with the Sheriff's Association. I've met with the animal control officers, and we will continue to do that. Tomorrow I give a webinar with extension personnel across the state. So we are making an effort to continue the educational component. As far as continued meeting of the group, I have a feeling that will continue, but I appreciate the suggestion. And
follow-up, Senator Roden?
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions of the committee?
for the questions of the committee. Thank you, Dr. Odekoven. Thank you to Mary Duvall and Lauren Pancras for initiating this. And just a comment of the, from the chair, I do agree with Senator Roden's comments that may be something we should further continue to look at. Having said that, this is a nice transition because what we are to look at here in our next item on the agenda, and it's not necessarily stated or posted on our agenda, but it is something that's in statute that 40-18-18 states that the state brand board shall make an annual report to the Senate and House committees on Ag and Natural Resources, as well as to the Senate House Government and Operations and Audit committees. This report shall describe and document the activities of this brand board from the previous calendar year and shall include the following: the number and type of livestock that's been inspected, the amount collected in inspections fees, the number and type of livestock that's been reported lost or stolen, the number and type of livestock that were placed on hold status, and accounting for any money paid to owners of livestock that have been placed on hold, as well as an accounting of livestock which ownership is not established, an association for which livestock that is placed in the ownership inspection and theft prevention fund, the number of investigations conducted, as well as other information requested by the committee. So at this time, what this statute states is that the brand board shall make this annual report to the Ag committees, and here is the report before us as compiled by the director of the South Dakota Brand Board, Larry Stearns, and this would maybe be something that we could look at doing for animal welfare and the animal welfare statutes stated in 40-1-1 as well. From that, then, Tom, I'm going to turn it over to our LRC staff to maybe make some comments on this brand board report, or do you have any comments?
I don't really have any comments. I think the last part of the statute directs them to send it in writing to the committees.
Correct.
And the committee may require them to present it in person, if and that's up to the committee.
Tom, you're correct. In this particular statute, it does say that it is to be delivered in writing. It does not say that it is to be reported in person. It just says may reported to be reported in person if the committee would like that. So at this time, members of the committee, I'm going to let you look through this. Are there any questions that you have? We could also compile them for Larry if we'd like, or we could also request, if you would like that, to have the report in person, or questions in person from the brand board themselves. Senator Roden?
Well, I was kind of hesitating to see if there were any questions. I would make a suggestion to the chair that that you just instruct the committee to direct any questions to you, and then you can compile them. And if indeed there are questions, then you could request Larry Stearns present at a future meeting.
Larry, Senator Roden, I appreciate the comments. That was my intention. I'll open up for any questions or comments from the committee. If not, if you think of one down the road, go ahead and compile them and get them over to me, and I'll have my intern and reach out to Larry. And if we'd like to have him in person, we can make that request if you so desire at that time. Seeing no other items on the agenda today, our next committee hearing will be Tuesday, January 25th, and on that agenda we will have the briefing from our new Secretary of Ag, Walt Bones, and our Deputy Secretary of Ag, I believe John Ferris, will be there as well. So the Department of Agriculture will give the overview on Tuesday, January 25th at 10 a.m. At this time, I am looking for, and I will ask for this time, a motion to adjourn. So moved by a motion to adjourn by Senator Maher, seconded by Senator Ferrix. All those in favor of the motion to adjourn, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Senate Agriculture and Natural Resources, I am now so adjourned.